Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, August 21st. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Sappenfield.
And I'm Samantha Lane Perfoss.
If the reports are right, some sort of peace deal between the United States and the Taliban might be drawing near. Ending the 18-year war in Afghanistan is a priority for the Trump administration. It is a time for considering how much the Taliban has changed since 2001. The Monitor's Scott Peterson has already shared reasons to be wary of the Taliban's promises. But it is also important to consider how much Afghanistan has changed. The list is long and substantial. Women's rights have dramatically improved, particularly in cities. Legitimate national security forces exist. The president and parliament are democratically elected. Cultural changes have taken hold, too. Young Afghans have embraced new clothing styles and haircuts with a vengeance, writes Javed Ahmad in the Washington Post. Several media channels broadcast 24 hours a day, producing everything from news to the Afghan versions of American Idol, mixed martial arts, and Sesame Street. We won't let the Taliban force their ideas on us again, says Zakaria, a high school graduate, to Radio Free Europe. Like Zakaria, half the country was born since 2001. Ultimately, the question of how much Afghanistan has changed will be theirs to answer. Now to our five stories, touching on the independent spirit of a true American political swing district, the tactics of the far right in Italy, and seeking emotional resilience amid changing environments. Our first story. American voters are so baked into their political preferences these days that true swing voters are a rare breed. That's what makes visiting Macomb, Michigan fascinating.
If President Donald Trump loses Macomb County, Michigan next November, he probably won't be able to win re-election. That's because it's a key swing county in a key Rust Belt swing state. In 2016, President Trump carried Macomb by 11 points and became the first Republican presidential candidate to win Michigan since 1988. Macomb County voters aren't yet focused on the coming political storm, but a reporting swing through the area digs up indications that President Trump is far from a sure thing to repeat his victorious 2016 performance. Many Macomb voters still like him, but others no longer think the president reflects their Midwestern nice values. The bashing of everyone and everything, is that necessary? Says Debbie Dymek, an estate sale manager who voted for President Trump last time around. Asked about possible Democrats, more voters mentioned Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren than a moderate like former Vice President Joe Biden. One thing is clear. The candidate that wins Macomb in the 2020 presidential election will need to actually campaign here. You have to work to get the support of this county, says Andrea LaFontaine, a former Republican state representative in Macomb. This story was reported by Story Hinckley in St. Clair Shores, Michigan, for The Monitor.
Italy is a unique laboratory for right-wing politics. A new political crisis there could be a bid by the leading far-right politician to gain more clout.
Italy is in political disarray after Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte resigned Tuesday, effectively putting an end to its 14-month-old ruling coalition of right-wing and left-wing populists. But the more significant effect of Mr. Conte's move might have been to prevent, or at least forestall, the election of the most right-wing government in Italy since that of Benito Mussolini. The political crisis is primarily thanks to Matteo Salvini, the highly popular, ambitious far-right interior minister and leader of the right-wing League Party, who calculated that triggering snap elections would play out in his favor. The League is one of the brightest stars in the constellation of far-right nationalist parties that are gaining momentum in Europe. But while Mr. Salvini's League is popular among the public, it holds just 17% of seats in Italy's parliament. fear of performing poorly in near-term elections could be strong enough incentive for the larger parties to set aside their differences and form an alternate government. This could spur an alliance between the League's now former coalition partner, the leftist populist Five Star Movement, and the opposition center-left Democratic Party. The story was reported by Dominique Sogel in Basel, Switzerland, for The Monitor.
When environments change, people can feel they've lost something familiar and dear. In an era of climate change, there's new thinking about how to cope.
Agnieszka Wolska, a therapist in Calgary, joined an eco-grief support circle that meets twice a month. She says she joined after losing faith that nature could rebalance itself. She compares the circles to being at a wake, but it's also where she finds hope. Together, we have less individual despair. We can just have connection instead of fear or just sadness, she says. Academics have begun to attach neologisms to feelings like Ms. Wolska's. Solastalgia, coined by an Australian philosopher in 2005, describes a form of distress caused by environmental change or ecological grief. Those feelings of loss surrounding a place are becoming increasingly common, as wilder weather patterns and natural disasters are, many scientists say, becoming more commonplace. And the capital of Canada's oil industry, where everyone knows someone employed by it, that can lead to mixed feelings. Just 52% of Albertans believe they've seen conclusive or solid evidence of climate change, the lowest percentage in Canada. But people here describe a feeling akin to mourning over the loss of natural landscapes. When you lose your special place, it's a deep feeling, says Albertan agronomist Susan Heather. This story was reported by Sarah Miller-Yana in Willow Creek No. 26, Alberta, for The Monitor.
Reconciliation and grace are hard in divisive times, but by committing to them, Tiffany Robertson is changing her community. This is part 6 in a summer series on people who are facing and successfully navigating America's most intractable challenges.
When St. Louis shut down in November 2014 to hear the jury's verdict on the white officer who shot African-American teenager Michael Brown, Tiffany Robertson's teenage daughter went up to her room with popcorn to watch the broadcast, ready to celebrate. When the news came that the jury had decided not to indict the officer, she came downstairs, sobbing. "There was no comfort we could give her," says Ms. Robertson. Another African-American teen, Vondrett Myers Jr., had been killed by a white off-duty police officer right in their neighborhood the month before. Amid these tensions, Ms. Robertson reached out in prayer and was inspired to establish a frank discussion group about race, Touchy Topics Tuesday, or TTT. At first, she was the only African-American, single-handedly fielding the white participants' hard and sometimes offensive questions. But with patience and grace, she saw outlooks transform. Gradually, the group became more diverse. Now, there are 3 TTT groups, plus a podcast and a special group just for city police officers, which Ms. Robertson co-runs with an African-American police captain. What I've gleaned the most from TTT is, if this attitude of reconciliation doesn't become intentional, then we just keep moving in the same circles, she says. The story was reported by Krista Case Bryant for The Monitor.
In Afghanistan, carpets are woven deeply into the nation's sense of identity. Getting them out into the world is one group's way of sharing that spirit.
Some 1.6 million Afghans are in the carpet business, most working from home. But during 40 years of conflict, some 90% of Afghan carpets were sent to neighboring Pakistan for eventual export. There, the final touches were added, and Afghan carpets were often tagged with a "Made in Pakistan" label. But the British development organization Turquoise Mountain aims to herald a renaissance in Afghan carpet weaving by serving as a bridge for Afghan carpets to foreign buyers while bringing every step of the process back to Afghanistan. That will help ensure both quality and working conditions. Carpets have been produced in this region for millennia, and when people speak about Afghan rugs, It resonates, says Natalie Parlberg of Turquoise Mountain in Kabul. For years, Turquoise Mountain has specialized in urban reclamation and training projects in Kabul and in bringing Afghan art to a global audience. Carpet dealers look at an Afghan carpet and they get excited. They keep using the word soul, to be honest, says Nathan Stroop, Afghanistan country director for Turquoise Mountain. There's still that sort of magical quality in the carpets, and I think the mythos of the story. This story was reported by Scott Peterson in Kabul, Afghanistan, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary on Colombia from The Monitor's editorial board. If there were an annual award for mass generosity, surely Colombia would win it. By the end of this year, the South American nation of 49 million people is expected to have taken in more than 2 million refugees from Venezuela, whose economy is teetering on collapse, largely from a dictator's mismanagement. In contrast, Colombia is a model of the freedoms that can engender mass charity. Largely on its own peso, Colombia has integrated many refugees into schools and the economy. Colombians also have a stronger-than-usual empathy toward the dispossessed. They endured a half-century of civil war until a peace deal in 2016. Yet Colombia is in need of foreign assistance. The United Nations has asked the international community for $738 million to aid Colombia and other regional nations coping with the refugee flow. Only about a quarter of the request has been filled. Helping Colombia is a way to reinforce its big-heartedness and its counterexample to the tragedy of governance in Venezuela. Assisting Colombia's generosity is a big assist for a peaceful, democratic Venezuela. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thank you for joining us. Please come back tomorrow when we explore how the disaster of the Yemen war and Saudi Arabia's heavy-handedness have begun to fracture one of the Middle East's most important alliances. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective column shares how one woman took a deep dive into what it means to truly love one's neighbor. You can find it in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Samantha Lane Perfoss, Morgan Anderson, and Jeff Turton.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2019.